Johnny, good morning.
Morning, Stevie. Our birds almost, you know, they played well. They played well. Defensively, I was very happy with how they played. They're getting healthy on defense. Yep. Secondary played well. Offensively, they were strapped because they had they've lost all of their offensive punch other than Zach Ertz, and that's pretty obvious to teams that are playing. And they were missing additional running backs, so they were hamstrung. And when you're missing starters, things just are a little bit more rocky. You know, you have to cut back the playbook a little bit. You can't do the things you'd like to do. They ended up losing. In addition, they lost two tackles during the game, one early and one late. You know, so they're really banged up on offense. A family member was texting with me during the game and was criticizing Carson Wentz, and he's been a Carson Wentz critic for a long time. And I said, look, I can't text with you anymore. You don't know anything about football. You know, you're just so wrong that I'm not going to indulge this anymore because you're so wrong. It's not a discussion. You're out way out there. So if you think about some of the games this year and the dropped passes in critical situations, you could add last night to the mix. No sooner had my relative texted that Wentz had missed, in the final drive, had missed two open receivers, that he threw that beautiful pass to the end zone that hit, I believe it was Aguilar.
Yeah, it was Aguilar.
In the hands. It was a tough catch, you know, not a simple catch.
He was
but
twisting.
The kind of catch I see guys make all day long. I watch football all day long. Should have been made. And it makes me think of the I guess this tweet went around the country. The man who raced a burning building, and they were throwing babies out of the building, children out of the building, and the guy said, "We, unlike Aguilar, we were catching them."
It's one of the funniest. Yes, and actually, I don't know. Did he ever? Did they ever get him to the game? Actually, that was.
Aguilar
was supposed to come. Yeah, he was supposed to come to the next. Yeah, he was supposed to come to the Jets game.
Got him tickets and everything. Yeah. So, but it's so. You know, people say, "Well, like I love the people who comment on you and I or send me tweet messages or Twitter messages or whatever and say, you know, it's a racing show. What are you talking about football for?" And it's not just a racing show. This is more than just a racing show. We're sports fans. We like all sports, yes. And you and I happen to share a love for the Eagles. And so it makes our conversations very natural. And the things we're talking about are everyone feels the pain when their team loses, and they understand what we're talking about. So, you know, I do enjoy hearing from people who say they look forward to our discussions, whether we're crying and whining or cheering and gloating. You know, it's what America does in the fall/winter, especially in the East and Midwest. And if you don't believe that, try planning something other than a Super Bowl party on the first weekend in February.
There you go.
See how many people show up. So, you know, anyway, it's, I was happy with the way they played. They're a little bit behind the eight ball, but you know what? This NFL season is so long and so grueling. Things change in a hurry, and, you know, they're behind the Cowboys, behind the eight ball, really, as far as catching the Cowboys. But the Eagles' tough part of schedule, they've got Seattle this week, which will be a tough game. But after that, they're in good shape, and that's not true of the Cowboys. The Cowboys have a tougher schedule. So things happen. I don't know that they'll go much further than winning the division, but you never know. You never know.
Well, while we're on the Philly topic, and you know, we can incorporate sports into this too. It was during the game yesterday that I subscribed to the Inquirer, and the Inquirer sent out the alert that Bill Lyon had passed away at 81, and suffering from Alzheimer's. And as beloved a sports columnist as there was in any major American city the last 40, 50 years, and a guy who was really a special read. He made any topic engaging, and really he confronted the Alzheimer's with great courage and grace. And Philadelphia this morning undoubtedly just feting Bill Lyon citywide.
Yeah, I have to agree with you, Steve. It just, you know, Bill Murray is my, Jim Murray, my favorite sports writer. But Bill Lyon was a familiar sports writer, you know, because he wrote about Philadelphia sports for so many years. And he was such a crisp writer, not flowery. Murray's, I don't know how else to describe it, except he wasn't flowery. He got to the point, and he had humor, and he was very personal. He liked to bring the story to a personal level, and he liked it both with his subjects and with himself. His book, Deadlines and Overtimes, Collected Writings on Sports and Life, you know, it's just great sports writing. And because it's about Philadelphia sports, it means so much more to me because I spent, you know, this was my home. And the things he was writing about, I had, you know, I had suffered through or celebrated with him at times, you know. And his battle with Alzheimer's was unique in that when he got the diagnosis, he decided that he was going to write about it. And, you know, I mean, the Alzheimer's, if you read these columns, which you can get them on, you can access many of them on Inquirer.com. If you can Google Bill Lyon Alzheimer's, whatever. Now, if you know anyone or in your family, I do, who's had Alzheimer's, it's such an insidious, terrible, horrible disease. And here he was, you know, he actually wrote about his diagnosis, about hearing the words and about his reaction to it. I'll read you this one paragraph. In the winter of 2013, the February cold, bone deep, I sat in one of those cramped and sterile little examining cubicles in the Penn Memory Center and listened to the man in the white lab coat ask if I knew what Alzheimer's was. Death by inches, I said. And you have it, he said. I'm pretty sure the world stopped at that moment. And then there was a roaring sound, like a freight train barreling through my brain. I sat there, frozen. I remember thinking, what a crummy job this poor guy's got. So he And from this point, this was his first column on Alzheimer's. He called it Al. He gave it a name. And I guess he had it for 3 years before he was finally diagnosed with it. And, you know, the columns continued the loss of his wife, him being in the the nursing home finally, and you know, he talked about at 4:30. He said 4:30 for meals. He said you better watch out because they come running. He said those wrinkly tiny women. He said they may look harmless, but they've got sharp elbows. So, you know, and he talks about death, and he talks about being in a nursing home and how death was always present. But they talked about it because there was an empty chair at the table for dinner, and you knew who was gone. So, yes, he was a sports writer, but he understood that. I'm trying to think of the line, one of his great lines. Sports, I can't remember exactly where this is from, but I remember it. It's related to him. Either his a disciple of his learned this from him, or he taught his, you know, specifically said this to his disciple or his mentor. He mentored people, and sports is everything, and sports is nothing. And that really is true. I mean, you know, in my life, sports has been everything. Whether it was going out to play when I was, you know, a kid in the street, sports kept me out of trouble. Sports kept me occupied. Sports gave me self-esteem. It took me places, introduced me to people, expanded my horizons, let me escape tough spots. Sports was everything to me. And then, later on in life, sports again was my life. Horse racing. While people don't want to argue, well, is it a gambling game? Is it a business? Is it an industry? But it's a sport. It is a sport. And if you don't believe that thoroughbreds are athletes, you've got some missing parts coming in from Detroit. These are the greatest athletes in the world. So sports has always been everything to me. And yet, there are times, like, you know, I went in for a heart procedure on Wednesday last week. I think it was Wednesday. The days kind of ran together there for a while. And, you know, before you go in, it was a relatively minor thing. For them, it was minor. But for me, it was not minor. You know, like I said to someone, I'd like to say it's a long way from my heart. But... It ain't. It is my heart. So, you know, when you are in that position, or a family member is ill, you realize sports is nothing. Life, family, love. That's a grandchild. My God, what an experience this has been, which you will get to experience in the near future. Unbelievable. And I cannot describe it. All the words in my pocket are meaningless. I can't describe this feeling. Anyway, those are important. Sports is an important one. But the rest of the time, sports are everything. So, Bill Ryan, great sports writer, but great person. And as humans, you know, and you wouldn't think that calling someone a human is a great compliment. But I got to tell you, the word human meaning not just that you are a human being, which we all obviously are, but that you're humane, is really important. It's a good quality to have. It's anyway, Bill hadn't written for a while, obviously, but he did a great job of chronicling his battle with Al, and we're all going to face these issues, and by reading. By someone sharing, and not just someone, but someone you've known, you feel like you've known for 30 years. You know, you feel like you read this person's thoughts every week, twice a week or whatever. Over time, you feel like you know them. So here's this person sharing his most intimate experiences, and hopefully he did it. Because hopefully it would help other people. And helping other people, we need a little more of that. End of sermon. Don't forget.
No, nicely said.
Your question played on the way out.
Exactly. Exactly. I'm going to send, I'm going to link there's a page, both the Inquirer and the Penn Memory Center have featured with all the columns. But I also want, aside from his writing about Alzheimer's, he was nominated 6 times for Pulitzers, 6, and so you need to read. You need to read his sports writing, and he is yet another. Off the top of my head, I'm not going to think of them immediately, but there's a pretty good tradition of Midwesterners coming to major metropolitan areas, and they acerbic communities like a Philadelphia, and being. Just perfect, and just having the right tone, and if you if you and the, and I started reading him, literally when I was in the 80s. It's got to be the early 80s. And,
yeah, I believe that's when he started. Yeah.
Yeah, and along with Ray Dittinger and so many. The Inquirer has had, and the Daily News have had, just a tremendous parade of top level. You can't. It's funny. Philadelphia is not a place where a guy's going to come in and fake it. You'll last about 10 minutes. So, Bill Lyon just going to be. He's just being lionized appropriately today.
Yeah. I'll give you one. If you can buy his book, it's really good reading.
I know, the collection, it's not, yeah.
It's not all about Philadelphia sports. He wrote about other sports, too. Here's just a paragraph from a column he wrote in 1981. It's called A Fat Chance in Paradise. State line, Paradise Island, Bahamas. Paradise Island, Bahamas. To describe Muhammad Ali as merely fat and 40 is not totally accurate. He will not, after all, turn 40 until next month. As for the weight, well, he tries to camouflage that with bulky, loose-fitting sweatsuits. They must have come off the rack of the nearest maternity shop.
he is
now here about horse racing. I don't know if you do. I mean, is this okay? Did I do this?
Of course. Well, the book, we should tell, I'm going to send a link. The book is called Deadlines and Overtime, and it's out of this world.
Yep. Okay, here's Smarty Jones, which, a little background, obviously, he was a Philadelphia product. He was our horse. He was this city's horse, and 10,000 people turned out to watch him gallop one morning at Philadelphia Park, which is now Parks. So this is the column about the Belmont Stakes. At the top of the stretch, he was in front by four lengths, and you were sure the Triple Crown was his. After all, he had never, ever allowed another horse to pass him, this fierce and valiant little tiger. But on this day, they had pack-hounded him all the way around the track, jackals nipping at wounded prey, pressuring and pestering. They had him pressed from the inside and from the outside. They had forced him three wide early, and they had never permitted him to settle into a comfortable rhythm. Every breath, every stride was contested. Still, he would hang on, wouldn't he? He would run his guts out, and he would win anyway, wouldn't he? The racing gods wouldn't be this cruel, would they? 50 yards from the finish, the late running Birdstone, a 36-1 shot, who had hidden in the shadows, did the unthinkable. He overtook Smarty Jones, surged past him with powerful, ground-gulping strides. He won the Belmont Stakes. He left the splinters of shattered dreams scattered all over Belmont Park. He ruined the Smarty Party. I mean, that is just... That's perfection. Perfection. And I guess as a writer, as someone who's written a weekly racing column for the last 25 years, roughly, that's some good writing. That's some really good writing. And that was his skill, as you said, six times. You're not nominated for those kinds of honors unless you have some. What do the kids say? Mad skills. He's got mad skills.
Yeah. Now I'm glad we had the opportunity in such proximity. To talk about him and with somebody, you know, and I mean, I could reach Tim Sullivan from the Globe and I'm sure Tim Layden, yeah. If I reached out to Tim, I mean, any of those, if Knack were alive, I mean, anybody at the highest level, he, you know, was one of the guys that other, you know, top sports writers. If you took a survey, you know, who do you read?
Yeah.
Who's writing? And you mentioned Jim Murray. I mean, Murray obviously it was. And you had to tell you what you going out to California. That was fortuitous to a large degree. I mean, you got plenty of Jim Murray.
I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt.
No, go ahead.
One of my favorite memories in racing, people, you know, ask you, one of my favorite memories, I was wet behind the ears publicity guy at Santa Anita, and I was recruited to pick up Jim Murray, because he couldn't see, he was going blind, to pick up Jim Murray and to drive him to meet Lafitte Pinkai for lunch. And so I had lunch with Lafitte Pinkai and Jim Murray, because it was around the Santa Anita, right around the Big Cap. And Jim Murray was writing a column about the Big Cap from the LA Times. And for me, as a young racing fan, you know, okay, I was starting to work, but I was in love. to be sitting there with my favorite sports writer since high school. You know, Jim Murray was syndicated, so I got to read him, you know, once in a while in Philly papers, and then when I got to California, you know, twice a week or three times a week, whatever it was. So here I was with my favorite sports writer and one of the greatest jockeys of all time and one of the classiest guys around. And here I was, this kid, you know, fresh out of college. I couldn't believe my good fortune. Of course, after I dropped Jim Murray off, I was in an unfamiliar area, and I ended up being in the wrong lane, and I was in one of those diamond lane things getting onto the freeway, and I got a ticket. But the rest of the story is good. But yes, that's one of my great, one of my favorite memories. I was probably 1980, 81.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
No, and I was at Colgate, and one of the great pleasures, you know, for those that there's a certain group of people listening that will not understand this at all. One of the great pleasures was the library, and one of the reasons I wasn't a great student at Colgate, aside from the, you know, the extracurricular activities I was involved in, the Colgate Maroon and the radio and, you know, the broadcasting and all that, and the decals, you'd go to the library and, you know, by the periodical section in the periodical room, there's newspapers from across the country. And, you know, growing up like in Hartford, outside of Hartford, you know, you'd get, you know, the current had B. Smith, I mean, who was very good. But, you know, certain syndicated columnists like you're referring, and Murray, of course, one of them. But you'd also occasionally get wind of, you know, other, you'd come across other sports writers from around the country. And I just can remember, you know, getting to college and, you know, being, even though I could go to a library certainly as a kid in Manchester every day, but you go to the library and be able to read, you know, local papers from around the country, and you end up, you know, having the opportunity to read, you know, read people that were up and coming. I mean, Lupica, as it happens, you know, I was writing for the Oneida Daily Dispatch. Lupica is from Oneida, and you know, so there was, when Lupica was, you know, early on in his career, but you'd come across all different writers, and I can just remember particularly Johnny in, you know, the Eagles championship season in '80. You know, one of my favorite things was the Monday paper would probably arrive Wednesday at Colgate, and, you know, being in the library, you know, to read the Inquirer sports section, you know, and read all the coverage, because you just, you know, it's 40 years ago, but it feels like it was 100. It might as well have been 100 years ago.
True.
You know, because you couldn't do what you do now. I mean, where you're, you know, you can read every newspaper in the country, you know, on a daily basis. It was a big deal, and being, you know, to read Lyon and Didinger and you know, all the coverage, you know, all those secondary and stories of, you know, and the breakdowns and everything. I mean, that was I've got a scrapbook of the 1980 of the season. That I assembled of clippings.
I love great sports writing. I really do.
Yeah. Well, every year, and you get those books, you know, those compilations, you know, the best of the year's sports writing.
Yeah.
I mean, that I grew up with that as well. And you know, a lot of those guys, you got to, you know, remember the punt, pass, and kick library? Did you get those books?
I don't remember.
They're little. This is in the 60s and early 70s. And, you know, when I was like, you know, 10 to 14, there was a series of books. I have them. I rescued them out of our house. And, you know, it's like great quarterbacks of the NFL, great running backs of the NFL, great.
Oh, yeah, I do have those. Yes, I do remember those. Yeah.
Right? They were like maybe right. seven yep. inches by 5 inches.
Yeah.
Little hardcovers and
yeah.
and those books were invariably, you know, the chapters were invariably written by sports writers, and so you, that was another way you got familiar with them.
Yeah.
With pictures by Xander Hollander. Every sport, right? Every sports photograph we ever saw as a kid, Xander Hollander took.
Good call.
And they were all grainy. Remember, they all had a certain sepia tone to them.
Yeah, great call. You know, it's funny because this weekend I was kind of recovering from the procedure, and I said, well, I didn't watch a lot of racing. I didn't play a lot this weekend, and because I was getting tired, you know, just I wasn't able to concentrate. And not that it makes much difference whether I'm concentrating or not, but it was making it difficult. And so I thought to myself, well, geez, I'm going to be unprepared for Steve's show on Monday. You know, we're not going to have anything to talk about. I said, we'll probably talk about the Eagles a little bit, but didn't follow much racing this weekend. So I'll be unprepared. And then I said, well, that's not unlike most of his regular guests. So I'll fit right in. I wasn't worried at all. Just kidding. Just kidding.
Well. You also got me in a very advantageous. I think we're both in it. It's an advantageous moment. You know, I got this birthday coming up this week, and so I'm in the reflective. You got me in a reflective mood anyway.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I'll tell you, it's someone who was moved out of a reflective mood. Someone cashed, and this just shows you here. You know, you often talk about. You try and get out the message to all the race, a lot of different racetracks. Remington Park, for example. Someone at ExpressBet, an ExpressBet player, scored on a pick six at Remington Park this weekend, or this week. 20-cent variety, returned $71,000, almost $72,000. And the ticket cost, the total bet, $134.40. So it can happen. Here's the Aqueduct pick five on the 16th. What was that, Friday? No, Saturday. 50-cent wager, obviously. $120 total bet, $27,000. We had a couple of those.
That's tremendous.
Well, one ticket was a $525 ticket, but we had a $120 and a $525, and then we had a Remington pick four, 50-cent ticket, $315, $19,000, almost $20,000. So I mention these things because I find them interesting. I like to see when small wagers cash big, or relatively small wagers. I mean, look, I'm not gonna kid myself. $134 for a pick six. That's a step. I mean, it's a good step for a regular player. We don't all have that kind of money to throw around, or $120 for a pick five. I'm not gonna act like it's a drop in the bucket, but it's not outlandish. It's not outlandish to bring home that kind of cash. So I just like to mention those when they come up. There was a 12 horse parlay sheet on the 12 horse. It was a 12-team parlay card that we saw on Twitter, and they had hit 11 of the 12, and they were down to the last game, and it was the game last night. It was the Raiders yesterday afternoon. The Raiders minus 10.5. So it was a $20 12-team parlay card. It was college and pro, and they were going to win. They were going to get back $50,000. And the Raiders, like, you know, it was a horrible beat. It was like the worst beat. They had the ball on the first and goal on the 1 yard line. They need a touchdown, and then Richie Incognito, you know, messes up, and they don't end up scoring, and that's the end of the wager. So, I mean, that's a tough way to go. And then someone mentioned, well, oh, here's the rundown: a false start, a 1 yard run, an incomplete pass, a 1 yard run, a 20 yard field goal, 17-10, and the final points of the game. So they went 11 for 12. And now someone said, well, you know, you're supposed to save. You're supposed to, you know, come away with some money from the effort. And you know what? That's great advice. And I haven't studied it, but I've been in this position before. Here's the problem. The person played a $20 pick 12, right? It's not Mattress Mac. There's not an unlimited supply of money. So if you're trying to save on $50,000, first of all, you're limited by how much you can get in your account. How much can you wager then on the other team, you know, to save? Your account limits, if you're doing it online or at a book or wherever, your account limits are going to be small. Then how much cash can you get your hands on? It's the middle of the 4 o'clock game. You've got to come up with this money before the 4 o'clock game start, in between knowing that you won the early games. And sometimes there's just a few minutes. So you've got to have your hands on enough cash. Now the question is, where are you going to get all that cash down? You can't just walk into a book and say, you know, here's 10 grand. Now, if you live in Vegas, different story. But if you're, you know, somewhere else, it's hard. So, yes, you're supposed to save. Yes, you can hedge your bet. Yes, you get on paper. But in real life, you can't do any of those things. I've had occasions where, just to give you a horse racing example, I've had occasions where you're alive to, you know, five or six horses in a pick five or a pick six for, you know, 20, 30,000, and a couple of them are paying more, and you're thinking, well, I want to save, but there's only so much you can deposit into your account. You don't have unlimited, you know, you can't deposit $20,000. They're not going to accept the deposit. They're handcuffed, you know, so... On paper, yes, it looks a lot easier than it is. So, bottom line, I feel terrible for that person.
I guess it was that, it must have been that play that I saw that talked about the procedure call, and yeah. Well, I'll tell you, if we do want to spend a couple of minutes talking about horses to the top of the hour. The series, how about the series of prices at Churchill? You've had in the last 4 days, Friday, you had a sequence that produced the pick five carryover into Saturday. Then you had a tricky sequence, that paid close to 4,000. And then yesterday, another series of impossible prices, and going into going into Wednesday, in fact, I've got it here because I already printed the PPs out. We've got $120,000 pick five carryover on Wednesday at Churchill with a sequence of 12 by 10 by 8 by 12 by 10. And there's also a high five carryover if you like high fives, $11,000 carryover in the nightcap on Wednesday. But obviously the $120,000 pick five on Wednesday at Churchill is going to get a lot of focus. And, you know, we could also Tony, we could also, I just got a text from, my partner, Tony, Johnny, we could also talk about what happened in the Stronach 5 on Friday, where it ended up being an $11,000 payoff. And I want to thank Brian Nadeau for, you know, the handicapping we did. Brian was right. The weather moved in at Miami Gardens and ended up, you know, taking the turf races off at GPW. There was that $20 horse at Laurel and the DQ that sort of you know, made things tricky, but a pretty nice $11,291, 37 winners on Friday. So the pick five carryover concept really is an opportunity that you got to look at.
It's funny you should say that. I told you I didn't do much handicapping this weekend or playing. One play that I did make is I dove into that late pick five at Churchill on Saturday because it was a good opportunity. And, you know, you get these carryovers in the pick five, and for 50 cents, you can play the game with tight money and maybe get lucky and score. I didn't. And I'm pretty sure my handicapping was not at its best, but I took a shot. And the Stronach 5, I was a little indisposed on Friday. I couldn't have jumped up for that. But we had four players that expressed that nailed the Stronach 5, and the tickets were from 252 up to 576, and $11,000 payoff as you mentioned. So, excuse me, these carryovers, and Gulfstream's got to be getting ready to give theirs away. I would think, right? I mean, the close of the meet. When's that? The meet closes soon.
Yeah.
So they'd be about ready to give it away, and they're up around 900,000. But anyway, these pick five carryovers, you really have to. I mean, you almost have to play. You almost have to take a shot. And by the way, I just want to say this too. While I was a little bit knocked out this week, I was able to look at the. You know, I wanted to play. I just couldn't. I couldn't get there. But I have been so impressed with the quality of racing, the field size, and it's just been good racing. The turf at Aqueduct, we've had, you know, dry weather at least, and they've been able to run on the turf. It's been good racing. Churchill's been awesome. And now Del Mar will get into their big part of their season, which is this turf festival that they have. So I've really been impressed with the racing this fall. You know, at the end of Saratoga Del Mar, you kind of take a breath and you know, you go back to Belmont and we kind of just get. Kids are back to school, or whatever you've got going on in your life, kind of revamps. You get home from you stop your summer, whatever you're doing in the summer. You kind of get back in the stride of things, and then the Breeders' Cup comes and it hits you pretty quickly after that. And I always kind of envision Breeders' Cup as the end of a season, but it's not. And I have to stop thinking that way because we've got some more racing left, and it's been really good racing.
The other very much.
Football starts, and that knocks a lot of people, you know, off stride a little bit. I mean, if you're a sports bettor, you know, you've got college and pro football, you've got college basketball is now rolling. You know, there are other distractions. But the racing has been phenomenal.
I'd have to go back and look at some charts from last November. But I just do not recall that we had this, you know, outlandish amount of big fields.
I agree.
You mentioned the quality, Johnny. It isn't as if, you know, these are fields of 62-5, you know, non-winners of two lifetime. I mean, you open up that Churchill card and the last six races are maiden special weights and allowances. And in New York, the fifth through the ninth is the same thing, maiden specials and allowances, state bred allowances, and then typically a maiden 40, state breds has been the nightcap, you know, for the most part. And including Minute Mouse winning one of them. So, I got no complaints, but, and Del Mar too. I mean, as much trouble as they're in terms of horse population, you know, they're doing the best they can. I think some people are interpreting this cancellation for Thursday as, you know, as much an opportunity to, you know, make sure you have a nice Friday, Saturday, Sunday set of races, you know, by scuttling the Thursday card. But apparently the weather is going to roll in there Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. So they're being, you know, the most familiar term lately is abundance of caution. That's the new watchword.
Yeah,
but no, it's been good
on so many levels, you know, and as a horse player, you're grateful because, you know, how many times do you purchase the racing form? Do you get, you know, you get your sheets or you get whatever you need, and you do all the work, and then let alone they come off the turf, but how about they cancel?
Yeah.
You've done all the work, you spent the money, and they cancel. Look, it's better for everybody. Just cancel. If you know that, the only thing is, the only fly in the ointment is you're relying on the weatherman. It's like trying to pick winners in the
good
NFL
luck
against the spread. You know, it's good. Yeah. But I can also say this, having lived in California, Southern California, for 30 years, those storms, they see them coming, and it's not like the East. It's not like living in the East where sometimes it pushes a little bit away. Usually those storms are so huge that they just swallow up California, and that's a big swallow. That's a big gulp.
Well, we still have got what?
Dog to death.
Yeah, no, two. We got two. We got, because Thanksgiving's late. Thanksgiving is the 28th, which is as late, I believe, as it ever can possibly get. Yeah,
it's
that's
on a
correct
Thursday again.
It's you know, I noticed that. Yeah. Well, no, because whenever November starts on a Friday, you get this. You get the late Thanksgiving. So we still have got. Amazingly, we still have got another full week before we even really get to some of the big cards. And in New York, they've pushed that Cigar Mile Day back to the 8th. And I'm going to be out at Los Al, which I'm now starting to get really excited about. Baffert and others and Blaine Wright is running Anno d'Or. We just heard him confirm that. So and the Starlet is always good. So Futurity Starlet Day at Los Al, and still plenty to look forward to.
And Vic will be on the scene.
On the Scene is Right. Yes, I will be there. I've come to love that. I've come to really enjoy that, the trip down to Cyprus.
It's a nice little track.
Yeah, it is.
Los Alamitos, yep. It's helped out a great deal in the Southern California calendar. When things got tough, Los Alamitos was there.
Yeah. And you know what else is there, Johnny?
What's that?
The Catella Deli.
Yep. Yeah. Been there a long time.
I love the Catella. Johnny, glad you're feeling okay, and I appreciated everything you I called it a meandering today, just on Twitter just now, so I appreciate our eclectic tour.
Yeah, well, in a few days, somebody asked me, well, when will you be back to normal? I said, I never was normal.
that means you have to start.
Yeah.
You have to start on the front end. I love it. I love it. Well, feel better. And
all right. And you're still around great. I love those cutbacks. That was one race that I did look at, and I thought she ran great.
She is game as Dick Tracy, as they say. She knows one speed, that filly. She just wants to go. There was a comment over the summer, and I don't even think Mike Welch realized it was our horse. But there was a comment. I saved it actually on my computer. He said, "This filly only knows one way to go. Got to admire the pluck." Something like that, you know, that she She just and she doesn't. She's not obviously not a runoff because she's actually slow into stride. You can't really demand that she go early. She breaks okay, but then she wants to settle. You're not going to rush her into contention. And then when she knows that the cue is coming, she will engage. And I thought Benji Hernandez. I wasn't happy with how he rode Kid Chocolate last week, but he rides Carlisle Belle terrific. I think he's got a lot of confidence in her, and she wasn't going to get to the winner, but nothing wrong with second in an allowance race.
No, those pops are pretty nice.
Yeah,
pretty nice.
That's for sure. We'll take a break. Got John White coming and more. Stay with us. Hour 3 at the races.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Hey, what's going on? Mikey here, and I'm going to tell you about an offer from my good friends at ExpressBet. Let's be honest, we know you love playing the races, but you can't always make it to the track. Sometimes life just gets in the way of a good bet. Well, what if I told you about a place where you never miss a bet and you start with house money? You'd say I'm crazy, right? Well, not at ExpressBet. Your first $125 are on them. Sign up at ExpressBet.com using promo code BYK. That's B-Y-K. And you'll get $125 when you wager $500 within your first 30 days. See what I mean? House money just for playing the races you were going to bet anyway. Check out ExpressBet.com for more information. And don't forget to sign up using promo code BYK. B-Y-K to get that $125 bonus. You're going to love it. And that's a Mikey guarantee.
Conditions apply. Must be 18 or older and 21 in certain states. Open account with ExpressBet LLC and reside in a state where such activity is legal, void, or prohibited. National Gambling Support Line, 800-522-4700.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
amazing achievements for Pennsylvania breeds on the world stage. Thanks to Finest City, Unique Bella, and Shamrock Rose, PA joins Kentucky as the only state in the past decade to breed Eclipse Award champions 3 straight years. Add that to our unmatched incentives. Plus, our racehorse development fund can only be used to support PA breeding and racing. Why breed anywhere else? This is Brian Sanfratello. Go to PABred.com and see why Pennsylvania is the premier place to breed and race.
Horsebills.com. Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-9 3-8-4-6-4-3.
Now, back to At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Where's the dagger? Can't find the dagger. Lost the dagger. Ain't seen the dagger. Where's the dagger? Look for the dagger. Lost the dagger. Has anybody seen the dagger?
We're back at the races. Back with Imelda May and Tiger Rag, better known these parts as the John White theme song. It never gets old.